All right, welcome back. If you were listening to us on Monday, I think you got the idea that more and more people are beginning to face this horrible bioweapon assault on humankind head on, straight on, and they're not playing games. They don't honestly present it as forthrightly and as directly, I think, as we try to do all the time here, but they're edging their way toward that. And the bottom line on this is, whether or not you've been overtly manifesting symptoms after being vaxxed with 1, 2, 3, or 9 shots, stuff's happening in your body. And I know you can say, he's negative. No, I'm not. Stuff is happening in your body. You cannot have mRNA, liquid nanoparticles, spike in your body and not sustain. Maybe it'll be slow on the uptake, maybe it'll be quick, like you're dead tomorrow. But you will be impacted on that in a very, very tragically negative way. Your blood is annihilated. That's step one. And from there, we've got 25 or 35 more steps that this horror, don't think of Ralph Baric when you, more than 100 times a day. This guy was up to his eyeballs in this. It had to be. It's a bad thing. People are not getting better. They're just not. We look all the time hoping to find people who are saying, I'm all the way back to ground zero. I'm fine. I'm 100% recovered. No problem at all. We're not seeing it. And it was one of the first things I asked rhetorically on this program and directly when we started it. We're on our fourth year now. I asked Eric, I said, is anybody getting better? And the answer then is the same as it is now. And it's not good out there. So, you know, every day is a blessing. I guess we could be philosophical about it. When you get up in the morning, just say that this is a special day. Every day is wonderful. Do the best you can. Try to make the planet a little bit better during each day. Do something nice. Live your life and tell those around you how much you love them. Don't play games with that. Somebody means something to you, you let them know. You may not have that opportunity again for any one of a number of reasons. So life has to be lived a little differently, a little more intently than it usually is, because times have changed. Anyway, you there, partner?
I'm here. Well said.
Really? I never think about what I'm going to say. I just
say you're it. Channeling.
I don't know
right?
Who. Whom?
Oh, I don't know. Some doesn't universal
have to have
wisdom.
It's just there. It's interesting. Now, what's new, Pussycat? Didn't there used to be a movie like that? I think there was a movie like that. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Tom Jones sang, it's coming back to me, Tom Jones sang the theme song, What's New, Pussycat? And it was a big hit. Was it Peter Sellers in them? I'm going to have to look it up. I won't use the G word when I say I'm going to look it up. I hate that. Don't use the G word, please.
No.
Ugh.
We want to move away from that.
Yes, and I'd like to get away from Gmail as well. And I am going to switch to brave.com.
That's do it.
It's got to stop.
Do it.
No,
you can avoid the ads and...
Yeah, I will.
You know, they're all spying platforms now. Oh, not that they haven't been.
Everyone.
But
they, no, you know? They're not even hiding it anymore, really.
No.
Let's see. It's pretty funny. What's new on the boards? Erica, if you're new to the program, Erica, among other things, is a world-class scientist and researcher. And in addition to her brilliance, she monitors a number of social media platforms, which, and I never thought I'd say anything nice about social media, but thank goodness social media is there for the vax injured.
Yeah.
They've got nobody, many of these people.
We've got our finger on the pulse. You know, by perusing some of the conversations. Now, it's, you know, obviously shills and trolls can insert narratives in there too, but You know, at a certain point, you get a feel for who's real and who's not. And, and you match it up to what you're seeing firsthand in your own life. And it's just happening on a much bigger scale once you take a sampling of social media.
Now, you take a look at, we shouldn't name particular, but anyway, you look at Facebook groups and things, and it is interesting because there are lots of groups for lots of different symptoms. In other words, people with headaches, people with myocarditis, people with blood problems, and yet the whole thing really needs to be refocused on the simple fact that coming in the front door, the first thing, this bioweapon virus or the injection destroys is your blood. And that's not a joke. And this is all tied into porphyria, heme, iron, and we're going to spend some time a little later tonight laying that out for you again because it's not being talked about anywhere else. And the more Erica looks, the more she finds that porphyria can underlie most all the major symptoms that are generated by the vax-injured. It's fascinating. I mean, the more she tells me, the more I'm just amazed that this is one of the key players. And we'll talk about porphyria in a little bit. But how many of these groups do you think there are out there now? Different groups.
Oh, countless.
Just for fun.
Countless. I mean, we are, you know, collectively, a very, very sick society right now. Very sick. You know, even before the pandemic, I think the average 30-year-old was already on, you know, at least a couple medications, pharmaceutical medications for some ailment. I shudder to think what it is now.
And again, these groups, as you hear, most of you here, are really, I think it's the only good thing about social media is helping these people who have been utterly abandoned by this society, we call it, and in many cases their own loved ones. They got nobody. And so you'll see them and you'll hear them, as you have for years, reaching out for help and support because nobody at home will help them. They're just left to hang out and dry, and they do. It's sad.
Yeah, the whole breakdown in I guess social interaction is so apparent now.
And how do you fix it? What do you do to fix it?
You know,
how do you teach people
to
be caring and kind? How?
If they can't get the support they need from their immediate family or friends in their physicality, what's left? You know, they go online and then they get sucked into the metaverse.
And when you say what's left, for a lot of them, thoughts of checking out are what's left.
Yeah, yeah.
And you hear that a lot, too.
Lack of, hope that you know, what was initially hoped to be something that could be fixed.
That sums it up.
You know, it's becoming apparent 3-4 years into this now that these injuries are, in many cases, not fixable.
No.
And the pattern I'm seeing with many of these is people thought they got better, and they went back to living, you know, as normal a life as they could, and then something happens. Sometimes they get another infection with whatever, or some other stressor.
In.
And they're back, and they have all of the injuries they had previously and more.
Mm-hmm. Sad.
And I think it's partially that, you know, they were poisoned, number one. Their body was forced to deal with a synthetic gene transcript that produced a noxious protein. And maybe by some miracle they shut that down and got enough of it out of their system that they could resume some normalcy. But then you go out into the world and everybody's shedding the same crap, the same poison. And so you're accumulating it from the environment as well.
Had to go into a store today and, oh, 2-3 masks, that's it. Everyone else laughing. You could see them to imagine their breath looking like white fog or something. They were just blasting each other right in the face. Now, that may sound paranoid, a little excessive, but it's not. It's what they have done to all of us as a species with these weapons. They have done that to us. Try not to breathe in chemtrail residue, for example. There's another one. You can't. It's there.
Yeah,
it's in your house, where we're living. Yeah. No, it becomes our medium. That's
right.
Exactly right. All right. Time out for 30 or 40 seconds of fun. Hold on. I can't resist. Sorry. Right. This is fun.
Watch you, pussycat. Whoa.
All right, that's all you get. That's time travel back to 1965. The movie of the same name starring Woody Allen. And I guess he produced it. I forgot. I thought it was Peter Sellers maybe, but that was Tom Jones. Tom Jones. I guess he's still singing. Anyhow, it's just fun to grab a piece of what was when we're talking about what is. Strange thing out there.
Cute.
Yeah. Okay. We have some videos for you. And first up, Jancy Lindsay, who is one of our favorites. She's a tiger. She doesn't take any prisoners. She just lays it out there like we do. And she's not messing around. She's got a video out of Dr. Charles Hoff, another very honorable and honest man. He's an excellent doctor who has paid a price. He's a Canadian. Isn't he a Canadian? Hoff?
Well, yes. He's originally from South Africa, but he's practicing in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's good. All right. Anything else to set this up here? I'll read. Go ahead. You read, Jancy, if you want. Go ahead.
All right. Hold on.
This is Jancy's intro to her post.
All right. She says, this is a global bioweapon, period. How many not on the pharma payroll doctors do you need to tell you for you to believe this? I'm asking now for all scientists and physicians and all healthcare professionals to publicly display on their social media pages that the COVID genetic vaccines are bioweapons. I am sick to death of having inside discussions of this without outside public acknowledgement. How do you think we will stop this genocide / mass global democide without this acknowledgement publicly? Surely not yet another conference.
Oh, isn't that the truth? How many conferences have we seen come and go and promoted by the names, and many of the names have their own superstores or the behind some like the wellness company. They're pumping out supplements. They're making an effing fortune on this thing.
Well,
believe
and then we've
it.
Had these, you know, congressional hearings that have essentially gone nowhere.
Yep. Big surprise. It's just chasing their tail. Just chasing their tail. Here's Dr. Charles Hoff.
People need to know that there has never been any successful vaccine made against coronaviruses. And so when the first dangerous coronavirus appeared in 2002, which came out of Wuhan in China, which was called the SARS virus, following that, scientists tried to make a gene-based vaccine against it because all previous conventional vaccines against coronaviruses had failed to either be safe or effective. So they tested this on laboratory animals. Ferrets and mink and other animals like that are very susceptible to coronaviruses, and so they developed a gene-based vaccine which they tested on these laboratory animals. And when they took blood from these laboratory animals that had been vaccinated, they found they had antibodies to the coronavirus, and they realized that they had discovered a brilliant new cheap and effective way of making vaccines. However, several months later, when they challenged these laboratory animals with the infectious organism that they had been vaccinated against, they found that these laboratory animals became extremely sick and many of them died. So this new type of vaccine turned out to be a complete failure. In fact, what they had created was not a vaccine, but an anti-vaccine, because instead of protecting those animals against this new virus, it actually made them more vulnerable than if they had not been vaccinated. And the reason why I'm telling you that is that I'm going to show you what has happened to Canada, and exactly the same thing has happened here. So when I heard that they were again using gene-based vaccines against SARS-CoV-2, the second SARS virus, I was not filled with hope or confidence, because I knew that the previous efforts had been a disastrous failure. So, and when I heard that with the new vaccines they weren't even doing animal trials, I was even more concerned. When I realized that they were rolling this out with no long-term safety data, it had only been that the shots had only been tested on a select group of relatively healthy adults, no children, no pregnant people, no frail elderly, no First Nations people, a lot of demographic groups that had literally not been tested on at all. And it was warp speed technology, which is a disaster for any vaccine, and particularly for a brand new technology that had no history of safety or effectiveness. So 2.5 months into the vax rollout, when 12 countries in Europe had already shut down the AstraZeneca vaccine because of life-threatening blood clots, and Canada was continuing to barrel on with it because Trudeau said even though it wasn't safe for the people of Europe, it was fine for Canadians, I thought that this was a significant safety signal that we could not afford to ignore. And so I sent an email to a group of doctors, medical colleagues, doctors, nurses, and pharmacists in the Lytton Lillooet area of southern British Columbia, saying, we have reached a turning point in this vaccine rollout. There is a serious safety signal in Europe. And for any healthcare practitioner to administer these shots without informing the people of the risk of harm, there is a serious liability issue for those people, because there is no informed consent. I sent this as a private email to 18 colleagues. One of those people sent this to the regional health authorities, and 3 days later I was in a meeting with my superiors there, who told me that I was guilty of causing vaccine hesitancy, and that private email was being sent to the College of Physicians and Surgeons as a complaint, because I was putting people at risk by creating vaccine hesitancy. And I was told that I was not allowed to say anything negative about these vaccines in the course of my work as an emergency room doctor. And I was told that if I had any questions about them, the questions were not to be directed to my colleagues, but to the medical health officer in charge of the vaccine rollout for our area. So I accepted my reprimand. I then began to see very serious neurological problems arising in my own patients. I had been these people's family doctor for 29 years. I knew them very well. And when I saw new disease processes initiated in these people that I had no explanation with, that all started anywhere up to 72 hours after their shot in every case, I sent a letter to this medical health officer that I had been told to direct my questions. And I asked them what disease process was being initiated by this gene-based therapy, and how, as these people's doctor, should I be treating it. And I asked whether it was ethical to continue this vaccine rollout in the light of the evidence of harm. and the silence was deafening. That letter was sent as a complaint to the College of Physicians and Surgeons.
Well, he's been doing his best, and that's all we can do. I wish there were more people like Charles Hoff.
Yeah, some good
ones. Pierre Corey's come a long way. Dr. Paul Merrick is another good one. We've got about half a dozen that we really like and respect. Certainly Jancy Lindsay. But by and large, most of them are just, they're there. They're mouthpieces. I don't know and trust anyone in the field. I make my own decisions, which is what we hope you all do. You have to be discerning about this. You have to look at the bigger picture. And most of them end up grabbing one subject. It's like a horse. They jump on the subject and they ride it and ride it until the horse breaks down. Then they'll step off and move over to another horse. Now ride it and ride it, and then that'll break down. And they just go from subject to subject like that. That's not what they should be doing. That's not their best contribution. But I don't want to speak negative about people.
Like you know, believe it or not, that testimony given by Dr. Charles Hoff was almost a year ago. It was part of that National Citizens Inquiry in Canada, and there were numerous speakers. They all gave very compelling presentations. And yet, the shots are still being given. People are still taking them.
20% now, right?
You know, legislation is being enacted to criminalize anybody that speaks out against it. The people still practicing medicine are being forced to get these things, to be up to date on them. So in spite of, you know, everything that's happened, the show goes on. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this bird flu thing, because Moderna is preparing a vaccine. And I don't
guess
know
what
if it's
platform,
them.
Guess what
yeah,
platform that vaccine is predicated upon. Yep, she
but
just
I also
said.
Think that Arcturus is going to be producing a self-amplifying mRNA vaccine for bird flu. So that one's worrisome because, well, it has the ability to self-replicate. And if it sheds...
give you a vax on the mRNA platform and it self-amplifies, or that means it'll reproduce itself, look out. And they're playing this bird flu thing. They've run it up and down the flagpole several times now. Now maybe they're ready to actually release it. I don't know. I do know this. The PCR test is not suitable for diagnosing an infection with a virus or a bacteria, according to its Nobel Prize-winning inventor, the late murdered Dr. Kerry Mullis. And I'm speaking for myself, not Erica here. We have no proof he was murdered, but the circumstances are damn suspicious, convenient at the very least. So we have an issue here of a PCR test being used as the gold standard to decide if somebody was infected with SARS-CoV-2. Nothing
or
could be...
whatever the virus
whatever.
Du jour is. Yeah.
Whatever. It's
I mean, this
not
is, this is a
diagnostic...
science or laboratory
no.
tool. It's not meant to diagnose anything, and that is on
correct.
The label, you know, the insert.
And the punchline is, and I read this, I read it several times over and over, one of the big egg-producing ranches, and they're farms, whatever the hell they are, industries, big buildings with a million chickens or 2 million chickens. Well, all the chickens were killed. They've killed millions of chickens. It's going to raise the price of eggs. It's going to raise the price of chicken. And they did it on the basis. Millions of chickens culled now, and they did it on the basis of what? One, as in O-N-E, one positive PCR test, allegedly, for H5N1 bird flu in the flock. One, and they killed all of them.
Yeah.
Do you see how wrong that is? Now, they don't give a damn. They've got insurance. So they get a big check. They kill all the chickens. egg prices go up, famine gets a little closer. We're being played so hideously, it's not
I know.
Funny.
Yeah, we are.
Now here's a little more of journalist, five-time Emmy Award-winning journalist, Cheryl Atkinson. She had an interview with, we played part of it last Monday. We're going to play a little bit more right now. Dr. Pierre Corey and the other gentleman.
Paul Merrick.
Forgot.
Paul
no,
Merrick.
It's not Merrick. No, no.
Oh, Jordan Vaughn.
Vaughn. Yeah. Okay. So you're going to hear the voice of Pierre Corey here. Then you hear Jordan Vaughn. Then you hear a devastated athlete who was the recipient of a career-ending injection. Nice young lady, track and field. Just these people suffer in absolute silence. They're not being talked about by the MSM, and not much at all by the alt news media, unless you're listening to this program. These people are out there suffering by the millions,
yeah.
And no one is talking about it.
Yep.
How shameful does it get? Well,
yeah.
When we have a government who is literally destroying the Constitution and in paying for the invasion of the former United States of America with American tax dollars, bringing these millions of bastards in here from fourth world countries, and they could, believe me, if there was a civil war here, they could deputize them or otherwise swear them in under UN auspices, give them weapons and say, keep the peace in Chicago or Baltimore. You think they wouldn't shoot? They hate Americans. Anyhow, here's Cheryl Atkinson with Dr. Pierre Corey and Jordan Vaughn.
Lots of other therapies which have similar. And so really I am just doing old good gumshoe medicine, really just figuring out how best to help my patients in a safe way, in an effective and sustained way. And that's just me trial and erroring. And I have to tell you, the clinical trials research response of our medical system has been appalling.
Cutting edge for you. What is sort of, are you on the precipice of learning the next new thing about your patients, or where are you in that?
A lot of what I'm seeing is addressing these people with venous disease and actually helping them get back to where they can walk upstairs and even back to running.
Now, he said, interestingly enough, I know you caught this, Erica, he said venous disease. That's in, as in vein, venous disease, V-E-I-N-O-U-S. But wouldn't it be a little more comforting if he said blood disease, given us that much? He's talking about the plumbing, not what flows through the plumbing. And what flows through the plumbing is what causes the plumbing to rot and deteriorate. Anyway, it's the blood.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the blood. But they will not go there.
Yep.
College, those kind of things. And those things have been almost what I would call game changers.
When we met Dr. Vaughn's patient, 19-year-old runner Ellen Redinger, a few months back, she'd gotten very sick after getting vaccinated and getting COVID.
I mean, I can pinpoint the day, the time, where I was. When I was running, I was doing a workout, and all of a sudden, I cannot feel my legs. I cannot feel, I mean, my heart rate is going 200. I can't do it. I call my dad. I'm like, I'm done working out. I can't do it. And I mean, I can't do any type of working out. I can go on a walk, but it has to be like a small, short walk for a short period of time. And if I do ever do it, I feel all I can do the next day is lay down.
Today, after months of therapies with Dr. Vaughn, Redinger reports she's back running in college again.
The good news is that we are making significant progress. More and more people are learning the things that they need to learn that they're not being told. And we're figuring out every day how to help our patients. And so we're getting better at what we're doing, and I expect that trajectory to continue.
The good news is we're learning about disease. We're learning how to treat it correctly. And we're also learning how to remake our system to truly back to helping patients.
Good. What year are we in again? 2024?
Yep.
2024? 120 years into Rockefeller medicine, the medicine of death and pharmacology.
Yeah. Yep.
And now they're talking about getting back to really treating people properly. And he, what's wrong with that picture? That ought to scare the hell out of everybody.
Dr. Vaughn says in the past year, he's diagnosed 125 patients with iliac vein disorder or May-Thurner syndrome. Prior to that, he says he'd never seen a case. Ahead on Full Measure are reports of mysterious blood clots turning up in cadavers. True.
Okay, well, they are true. We've seen the white calamari blood clots too many times to count. Dr. Richard Hirschman, not doctor, embalmer, mortician, Richard Hirschman. I wonder if his favorite holiday is Halloween. Ah, never mind. All right. So, Richard Hirschman was one of those who really began to pull these clots out of dead people and show them. We were aware of them before he even started doing that, but he did it, and he deserves some credit. These clots are, remember, anybody who's gotten injected, and maybe anybody who's had the virus, because that's a bioweapon too, has countless little tiny clots growing in their systems. They're all over the place. They're little tiny. How big, how fast do they grow seems to be one of the larger unanswered questions. But if you've been shot up, you've got these little clots. And they are microclots, but they're also free-floating around in the blood. And they're growing, apparently. This is crazy stuff. So we don't need to go and listen to that. We've heard it before. I think what we should do here is talk again about this issue of heme, which is critical for life. It's a part of your body. It's not hemoglobin, it's heme, and it's made in an eight steps, right?
Eight steps, yep, eight enzymes.
Eight-step process, yeah, yep. They're all enzymes, and they all work together. It's made in the bone marrow, where things are made. Some of it is made in the liver, too, right?
Mostly in the liver, about 80% in the liver.
Mm-hmm.
20% in the bone marrow, and then every cell in the body has the capability of producing heme, and heme is the way your body handles oxygen.
Do we want to call heme a protein?
Yeah, it's a molecule. I don't know if it's a protein. It's a structure, and it's designed to hold iron so that your body can manage oxygen.
It links up with iron and therefore becomes a competent holder of an oxygen molecule that it can take around your body and your bloodstream, hopefully, and deliver it to where it's needed.
Exactly. Yep. And so heme is not only used for oxygen transport, but also your detoxification enzymes, otherwise known as your cytochrome P450s. And these are necessary to detoxify what we call xenobiotics or toxins from the environment or even toxins, metabolic toxins that your body creates, like the hormones. Those need to be detoxified. And so when you have a deficiency of heme, that process suffers. Anything that requires heme in the body, and there's many reactions that require heme, can't be accomplished. And as a result, the body degenerates. And one of the first systems to degenerate is the nervous system because it's so dependent on oxygen. So early on in this pandemic, much was written about the virus's effect on the blood and heme. And it was posited that perhaps heme was the target of the virus, the main target. Because on a red blood cell, there's at least three different receptors, ACE2, CD26, and CD147, and there may be more that the virus can attach to, and cause the hemoglobin to separate from the red blood cell and lose the iron. And that's why people were getting sky-high ferritin. That was the iron falling out of the red blood cell. So wherever the spike goes, that process can happen. And because of the inflammation, that iron is going to be locked away inside cells that become hypoxic. And then when oxygen is reintroduced at some point, you're going to have severe oxidative stress, similar to what happens after somebody has a stroke. It isn't the lack of oxygen that does the most damage. It's the reintroduction, the reperfusion of oxygen that generates all the damage. So in this case, you know, oxygen is toxic because, you know, it's unmanaged. So this destruction of heme and then the body's inability to regenerate it or resynthesize it because the spike also interferes with that. So you're losing it faster than you can replace it. And the precursors to heme are known as porphyrins. And these things start to accumulate because the end product isn't being made. So it's like an assembly line. And they build up.
Let me ask a question real quick.
Yes.
Porphyrins, heme. Heme is a molecule. What are porphyrins and where do they come from?
Your body creates them.
Okay.
And they are the building blocks of heme. They have to be assembled.
Okay.
So that the heme molecule can be put together and then have a iron molecule loaded onto it, and then it can be incorporated into hemoglobin or wherever it's going to go. You have myoglobin, which will store oxygen in the muscle. You have neuroglobin that will do it for nerves. And then you've got a bunch of various enzymes throughout the body, cytochromes, which are, you know, transport electrons in the mitochondria. So not having heme is devastating. And having an accumulation of heme precursors, i.e. perforins, is also devastating because they're toxic. And they build up, and if they're building up in the liver, you're going to have liver damage. And I suspect that is probably the reason we're seeing
so many liver cases.
Liver cancers, liver failure, cirrhosis of the liver, gallbladder issues. The liver's getting plugged up with this stuff. And
pancreas?
Pancreas, I think, is getting more affected by the iron because it has receptors on it for iron transferrin. And, yeah, there's a lot of pancreatic issues happening right now, too.
So just to keep this simple for everybody, we always try to do this. Porphyrins are created by the body, and they're intrinsically involved with the creation of heme. You have to have both, and they have to be properly regulated. You cannot have heme deficiencies and have proper hemoglobin in your blood to deliver the oxygen. It won't work. So they have really targeted this in the beginning as one of the primary building blocks of catastrophe, dysregulating the heme and impacting the proper production and utility of porphyrins.
And by extension, you've dysregulated iron.
Right on the money.
And there's more than one thing that's going on with the iron, but this is a big part of it. You know, you can't make that final conversion, putting the iron onto the heme, and so what happens to the iron? Well, it just hangs around, and you accumulate more and more and more as the body attempts to build the heme, but it can't.
Unreal. That's why you don't want to go under these bag bars and get get an iron infusion. You don't want that. You don't need it. You've got problems already.
Again, the iron is not the reason, or lack of iron is not the reason you're not building heme. There's a problem with the enzyme.
Right.
The spike interferes with that final step. It may interfere with the earlier steps too. Yes, it's an 8-step process. And if you're somebody that has an inherited form of porphyria, and you may not even know it because you could go your whole life unless you know you're challenged, you would never perhaps know that you have it.
That's right.
Or you can have an acquired one from a chemical exposure. It's possible to develop porphyria that way. But you know, it is devastating, and that porphyria is known to contribute to Alzheimer's and possibly
okay.
other neurodegenerative diseases.
There's another one. Now, does that have anything to do with causing misfolding?
Well, yeah. If you can't regulate the iron and oxygen homeostasis within a cell, mm-hmm. yeah, you're going to have problems folding proteins. And, you know, excess of iron is a hallmark of Alzheimer's and many neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
And it mm-hmm. ties mm-hmm. into this ability for the cell to manage heme, either create it, export it.
What else does heme do in the body besides link up with iron to carry oxygen as the crucial part of hemoglobin? What else does heme do that if it's absent or in deficiency, what would it do? Anything else you can point to?
Oh, yeah. Well, the mitochondria. You need it for the cytochromes that help create
in the cells.
ATP. Uh-huh. Okay. And also heme. It's so... It becomes a vicious cycle. You need mitochondria to make heme, and you need heme mm-hmm. to make ATP. And so,
how did the porphyrins factor into the 8-step process of creating a heme molecule? How do the porphyrins?
Well,
they're what
are created through this 8-step process.
Okay, and then
so
they
there's
work
different types
to create
of porphyrins.
The final. They're the final pin in the construct of heme from the 8-step process.
That's right.
Very good.
Now, the interesting thing about them is that they absorb light at the 450 nanometer wavelength, and that's the reason why those cytochromes in the liver, actually they're in virtually every cell, but very heavily expressed in the liver, the cytochrome mm-hmm. P450s. 450 is the wavelength that they absorb. So they absorb electromagnetic frequencies in that wavelength, 450 nanometers, but if they have a metal, which they're designed to attach to metals, they can absorb electromagnetic frequencies other than that, outside of that. And this is known, the accepted cause of electromagnetic hypersensitivity, and this has been known for a couple decades.
All right.
Yeah.
So electromagnetic hypersensitivity, there are many other hypersensitive issues we've covered in great depth, including the idea of being hypersensitive to the smell, the odor of
yep.
people who have been injected or shed upon severely, and they are now releasing into the air molecules which will be read by people who are hypersensitive, and it's rather repulsive. It's a very negative smell. Okay.
Yeah, so anything, what happens is when you're exposed to a stressor, toxin, oxidative stress, you have an enzyme in your body that starts breaking down the heme. And partially because heme is so toxic, it's used to defend against invaders. You know, it would be toxic to certain viruses.
Isn't
so your
that
body
amazing
starts,
that heme is
yeah,
a
body,
defender
there
like
are,
that?
It's the red wild. Blood cell actually has immunological attributes.
Got it.
So whenever you're exposed to a toxin, chemical, whatever, this starts, the process of breaking down heme starts. And so the heme is needed to detoxify some of these chemicals, you know, foreign toxins, xenobiotics. And there comes a point where the system's overwhelmed, and then you start to get the backup of these porphyrins. And they will make you feel sick. I mean, one of the classical signs of the acute intermittent porphyria is horrendous stomach pain, headaches, nausea, vomiting, neurological symptoms, and also, in some cases, skin blistering. Especially when it's exposed to UV light, like on the hands or the arms or the face. These porphyrins, if they accumulate in the skin, because they're absorbing UV light, they will create free radical damage and cause blistering.
Those little clear water blister kind of things, right?
That's
why.
No, they can look scabby. Mm-hmm. You know, they're rather unsightly.
And also, we should point out as an adjunct to that, the simple fact that because of climate engineering, geoengineering, we are now getting a tremendous amount more UVB than we should. It's supposed to be 6 or 7%. It's up in the mid-40s now and higher sometimes.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
common. And that'll yep. trigger a lot of these things that that you're talking about.
Yep.
Wow. Not good. Okay, well, we will continue to revisit this from time to time because it's a very big player, and it's been completely ignored by all of the name talking heads. They just don't go there. No helium.
Yeah, and I look at these people trying to spin this nano thing. Yeah, and it's getting just beyond ridiculous at this point. You know, quantum this, self-assembling that, and none of these people are paying attention to the expressed protein of this gene being, you know, the spike protein. It is utterly devastating to the functioning of the body.
And somebody can breathe it right into your lungs and into your blood and into your body, okay?
Yes.
That's where we are.
Just like a mycotoxin, if anyone's ever dealt with mold toxicity and mycotoxins, the minute you breathe that in, within seconds, it's in your bloodstream and circulating systemically. And this isn't any different. You've got somebody that's genetically modified, that's producing this protein, it's coming out of their skin, it's coming out of their breath. And if you're in a closed environment or up close to them, you're getting it too. And, you know, some people can handle it better than others, but I think everybody at some point, because it is so toxic, is going to hit a threshold and develop the hypersensitivity because of the breakdown in the assembly of heme.
Hypersensitivity is actually, formally, it's an injury to your body.
Yeah, I mean, the question is it permanent?
Right.
Because, you know, in some cases, the porphyria, once you develop it, you know, you don't go back. You've got it for life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the case with this, but... And then, of course, mm-hmm. people that have mercury or lead toxicity mm-hmm. probably already have porphyria, a secondary porphyria. And so when they get exposed to spike, they're already... You know, at a loss, they're going into it compromised.
Got it. Okay, we have a few readers on porphyria here. You want to jump into that?
Yeah, I call attention to it only because I'm seeing increasing numbers of reports of people becoming uh-huh. extremely electromagnetic hypersensitive, and they don't know why. And you know, there's no question that the amount of these frequencies in the environment is increasing. But some people have pushed them over the edge. And it is associated with having been exposed to the bioweapon.
Yes.
And, all right, let's see. What do we want to do?
There's three of them here. There's one called Despair. And then right under that are the next three. One, two, and four, I think.
How about down to the bottom, shedding porphyria? Let's start with that.
Sure, go ahead.
Please help. I am having an extremely bad EMF reaction. I get sick around Wi-Fi and electricity. I have been taking zeolite for the past month. It made my stomach and my migraines better, but the EMF is extremely bad. I can barely use my phone. Zeolite has silica. Can that make you conductive? Or is it all because of the shedding? Now, zeolite is, you know, you've got to be careful with it. That's a good choice for getting some of these accumulating porphyrins out of the body, but some of the zeolite is contaminated, you know, because it's extracted from natural sources and because it is so good at picking up toxins in the environment. If that zeolite isn't clean, you're adding more toxins to your body, and you know it's not doing the cleaning it should be doing. I have seen that basically our activated charcoal works extremely well for getting excess porphyrins out of the body, taking it a couple times a day, 2 to 3 hours outside of meals, away from meals. Chlorella, as long as it's a clean chlorella, because that too, if it's grown in an outside environment, can absorb toxins from the environment. Ideally, you'd want something that's tube grown or tank
chlorella
grown, so that you don't have...
Can chlorella be called algae?
Yeah, it is. It's a green algae. There's spirulina, which is a blue-green algae, but I think for this, I would personally prefer the chlorella. But, you know, again, people are going to have varying sensitivities to some of this stuff, and you might to experiment with it.
The reason I say that is because Bio Superfood has four of the most powerful, beneficial, potent algaes in the world as its complete constitution. That's what it's made of.
Yeah.
So people
who are
taking Bio Superfood are doing very, very well. Go ahead.
The chlorophyll molecule that's in these green algaes is almost identical to hemoglobin.
Oh,
the only difference is chlorophyll has a magnesium molecule in its core versus hemoglobin that has iron. Mm-hmm. So people have been helped with these green algae powders because they, too, can, well, deliver electrons and oxygen to a starving cell.
Mm-hmm.
And, conversely, grab onto excess metals and hopefully get them out of the body.
Got it. Okay, well, read the next one here. We just have a little bit of time left, maybe. I used to have that problem. Here, I got it. I used to have that problem. I used chlorella spirulina powder in juice for 45 days, and I don't have EMF problems anymore.
Hey, there you go. That's definitely a viable option.
Think of this is yet another reason to get on the Bio Superfood bandwagon. That was the final sum and total accomplishment of years of research by Soviet scientists after the Chernobyl nuclear power plant disaster. They were trying to find something that could chelate radiation out of the human body. And what they found did far more than that. And that's what's in Bio Superfood. That and Allicin C, one capsule a day. I don't go without it, and I'm not joking. Every day.
No, it is a real superfood, and you don't need a lot.
No. It's good stuff. And you guys are good stuff. Thank you for being out there. Thank you for caring. Thank you for sharing. These programs need to be passed around. We will talk in the future more about porphyria. That's a big one. Just remember that spike is in there destroying your hemoglobin, your red blood cells. It's splitting it off, and you end up with two toxic products that are turned loose in the body, iron and heme. The spike is the deadliest thing ever.
And then the porphyrins when you try to rebuild the heme.
Exactly. Okay, well, we put it out there. Good job. Thank you again. And
okay.
Keep doing it.
Thank you, Jeff. All right, good night, everyone.
Take a break and come right back with Dr. Leonard Coldwell coming up next.